This is the Gas House Gang on 104.1 FM KMOX. Sponsored by Saliga Heating and Cooling, a Daikin Comfort dealer. Now, the Gas House Gang on KMOX.
Coming to you on a Tuesday, that means Bernie Miklas is in the house. Bern is here. Chris Raji's here. I'm Tom Ackerman. John Kelly, the television voice of the Los Angeles Kings, is going to be with us here at 12:15. So we're going to get right into some baseball. We'll talk some hockey with him. Back to baseball. Lots to do with Bernie for the next hour. Bernie, news just popping here at the top of the hour. Was Jeff Passan's report that I saw that Kurt Suzuki has been hired as manager of the Angels. Now, we knew that Albert Pujols was no longer in discussions with the Angels. How about Artie Moreno? I mean, the wind blows a certain way, and he decides to change his mind, I guess. But the Padres tomorrow for him in terms of an interview. It looks like the Orioles are still in play, Bernie, for Albert.
Well, my people in Baltimore still think they prefer an experienced major league manager, although they're intrigued by Albert. So they haven't closed the door, but let's see. The Orioles are a lot more eccentric than they need to be with all the talent they have. There are times that people listen. My families are all Orioles fans. They can't figure the Orioles out. When things seem obvious, the Orioles do something different, and it's kind of like what are they doing here? I think the Padres would be a very good fit for Albert if he's determined to manage in 2026. Listen, they're going to be losing three or four key pieces to free agency, but they have a really aggressive general manager who will make trades. He'll do a lot of things to try to improve the team. I'm sure he'll give them the leeway to hire his own coaching staff. And if he doesn't, then Albert ought to just say, well, no, thank you. You know, but I think, you know, there are players on that team, veteran leaders that have the utmost respect for Albert Pujols and would help make his job easier because he doesn't have to win anybody over there. So if he's going to manage in 2026, that would be the place.
Yeah, they're going to listen to him, aren't they, Grons?
You would think so, yeah. And it seemed like the Angels were a natural fit for him just because he is already on the payroll. He does work there. He's played there, so he knows the organization. But I would not discount the possibility they just didn't want that job. Because they are also, like, you know, you're talking about Baltimore. They have also been a pretty confusing organization the way they've operated for 20 plus years. So yeah, maybe you just didn't want to be part of that.
But Baltimore's got a lot of talent. Yeah. The Angels have no plan. Their roster is like one of these crossword puzzles you get out of the closet, and there's other puzzle pieces in there that don't belong to the puzzle. And then, the dog had gotten in there and chewed up, 25 puzzle pieces. I mean, it's just a total mess.
Yeah.
And no offense to you, Ronch, because I know that personally you like the owner of the White Sox. No, and there's nothing wrong with that, right?
He's fine. All right. I think they're run very poorly.
Yeah. If I had to say the three worst places to be if you're an aspiring young manager, you don't want to go to the White Sox. You don't want to go to the Angels. You certainly don't want to go to the Pirates. I thought all along, and I think you guys remember me saying this, if you're Albert Pujols, man, there's going to be so many opportunities. Do not get back in there with that madman owner who's just awful at what he does.
I totally agree. And as you explore this position, Albert, be selective. I mean, go where you need to go to be most successful. And, you know, Bernie, that Southern California area, the Angels sit there with the Dodgers and Padres, both in obviously a different league and same division, but they just dominate the market. And the Angels, like, in all honesty, in Orange County, there just isn't that much of an appetite for them. I mean, that's the Dodgers town. That's the Lakers town. And the Dodgers are in the World Series again. I do, in my gut, believe that most of, obviously, Canada, but this country is rooting for the Blue Jays here to upend the Dodgers and to change things up a little bit. And by the way, I think that Blue Jays team can give them a series. They're the real deal. I mean, they don't mess around. It should be really, really fun starting on Friday, Bernie.
Yeah, they're going to have to hit home runs. I mean, that's fueled them this entire postseason. They don't put a lot of base hits together, walks together. They don't piecemeal an offense. It's power driven, and they can do that. But some team, and there's only one team left that can do it, has got to do something to slow down that Dodgers starting pitching, because it has been utterly phenomenal this postseason. And no one has really laid a paw on any of those four guys. I mean, they just have dominated everybody. I mean, Ohtani, his first postseason start was kind of eh. Other than that, you can't lay a mitt on them. They're unbelievable. So that reason alone, I would give the Dodgers the edge, but I don't need that reason. I mean, they're the Dodgers. You know, when you add up all the luxury tax, you know, penalties and all that, they'll be around $500 million in payroll this year.
Yeah. And you know, that's why I'm looking forward to talking to Maury Brown about this at 12:30, you know, because there's already a great likelihood there's going to be a lockout. The owners are going to want a salary cap. And the argument we have seen made is that, well, if the Dodgers win, that just gives them more fuel to want the salary cap, that nobody can compete, because look at the Dodgers. They spend all this money. They have all these resources. So I'd like to know what his perspective is on that. If it's really true that if the Dodgers win, it makes the possibility of a lockout greater, and the argument that they make too much money and there should be a cap. I'd like to know what he thinks about that, because I don't think it makes that much of a difference, honestly. I think the owners are going to want the cap the same amount now as opposed to a week from now if the Dodgers are world champions.
Tom, can I throw a take in there about the Blue Jays?
Yeah, please do.
Because I know you wanted to talk about them a little bit. I was watching this last night. I also was doing some studying. And if Cardinals fans want to look at someone, I always tell them that, you know, look at the Brewers. And then, you know, a lot of them, well, what have they won? You know, well, they've won a hell of a lot more than the Cardinals since 2018. So, but the Cardinals have to sort of set up that type of payroll situation, except higher. And they just have to be smarter, like the Brewers have been, about personnel and develop more pitching, all that good stuff. But if Cardinals fans want to see maybe the best example of like what the Cardinals can do, because we've seen the Blue Jays do it, it's don't be afraid to rebuild. Get out of 500 land. Get out of 493 winning percentage land. The Blue Jays, you know, they had that group with Bautista and all the Marcus Stroman and all those guys. And they were in the playoffs a lot, and they never could really get over the hump. They couldn't get a World Series. Then they started to slack off a little bit, and ownership decided, you know what, we've been putting this off for 20-some years. We're going to rebuild. Because literally, after winning their second World Series in 93, the Blue Jays went 20 years in a row without making the playoffs. Then they had a revival, but they couldn't quite get there, and then they started to recede again. They finally said, the heck with it. We have to rebuild. They began selling off parts. They pumped a lot of money into draft and development, the international signings, right, down in Dominican Republic or whatever. And they also built an organization where everyone is on the same page. Everyone's synced. Everyone's aligned. And the other thing that is really interesting to me about this, when I'm looking at parallels between the Cardinals and the Blue Jays, John Schneider is a lifelong Blue Jay. They drafted him. He was a catcher in their system. He became a catching coach. He became a regular minor league coach. He became a minor league manager. He moved all the way up the chain and finally major league coach. And the Blue Jays said, you know what? You know exactly what needs to be done. You know every player in this organization. You're exactly what we want to lead a rebuild. And he's there. And he's a good manager, and it worked. So that's why I look at John Schneider and I say, yet in St. Louis, where Ollie Marmol fits that exact same profile, he's still viewed as some kind of outcast or something. Look at the Blue Jays as an example of how you can do this, and you don't have to hire a celebrity manager to do it. You hire one of your own who has paid the dues for 15, 16 years and who knows your organization inside out. You do it that way. It's okay to do it that way. You don't have to win the headlines, the press conference. Do what you think is best about rebuilding your team.
That's a really, really good point. I actually thought about that a little bit when I was watching Schneider being interviewed on the field yesterday and how special that must have been for him. And I'll give you one more. They had an incredible run this year, capping off what has been a climb in fan experience, marketing, business operations, facilities. I mean, it has been amazing. You know who was involved in that? The guy the Cardinals just hired to do that exact same thing. Anouk Karunaratne was part of that.
Yeah. I'm going to text him later and congratulate him, but also ask him if he sees similarities.
Mm-hmm.
What happened in Chicago, and that can be applied, not Chicago, Toronto, and applied to the Cardinals. Now, some fans will say, and rightfully so, well, wait a minute, though. The Blue Jays really pumped a lot of money into that team this year. They spent a lot of money, Bernie. You didn't talk about that. Oh, give me a chance. I'm talking about it now real quick. The Heim Bloom plan with Bill DeWitt is when they get this thing up and running and to the level where they think they can win, oh, they're going to start to pump money into the Major League payroll, just like the Blue Jays have done. I guarantee that. So don't worry about that part, but this is not the time for that.
It is going to be a fun Friday. That place was rocking. I mean, you could just feel that noise coming out of the TV. It was unbelievable last night.
How about Max Scherzer?
I know. How about Don Mattingly going to the World Series for the first time ever? I mean, really a neat team to follow. Let me tell you, we have John Kelly. I cannot wait for him to join us here next.
Pass across. Myers, a drive, and he fired wide, and the Blues should have a break here. They do. It's a 3-on-0. Unbelievable. Shen, 3-on-0. Can he win it? They do. Schwartz on a 3-on-0. Now I've seen it all. I don't believe it.
Good one, Pajeski. I love that one. That's a great cut. It's one of JK's best. John Kelly joins us now with Bernie Miklas, Chris Ranji. I'm Tom Ackerman on the Gashouse Gang, the television voice of the Los Angeles Kings. John, great to have you back on the radio station. How are you today?
I'm doing great, Tom. How are you guys doing?
Doing great. 23 seasons calling Blues games, including a stint that began partly here on KMOX, having you on. Doing those games then and that great run. Let me ask you just up front, what is it like to be back here knowing that you'll be calling the game tonight for the Kings? What sort of emotions are running through you today?
Well, it's great to be back, obviously. I got to sleep in my own bed last night and see my wife and kids, who I haven't seen for a while, so that's number one. And, you know, coming down to the rink this morning, seeing a lot of familiar faces and people that I've worked with and known for the last 21 years. It's great. So I have nothing but positive memories of my time here, and I'm looking forward to the game tonight, quite honestly.
JK, Bernie, first of all, great to talk to you. Number two, I'm not trying to start any trouble here. I'm just going to say, as a fan, I miss you, and that's not any reflection on anybody else. I miss JK. And so I speak for many in saying that. The second question I have is, what kind of surfboard did you buy out there?
I'm too old to surf, Bernie. You know that.
I don't know.
But I do have a place about 3 miles from the beach. So my wife and I love walking down. It's called the Strand. And you can just walk or bike ride for miles out there. And, you know, it's like 72 degrees every day and sunny. So it's a pretty cool place to walk the beach. So no surfboard for John Kelly, that's for sure.
Well, John, you did end up in a pretty good situation with an organization that has done a lot of winning. Is it has it been easier now to, I guess, sort of move past what happened here in St. Louis? Because we know it wasn't your decision to leave the Blues.
Yeah, it was. Sorry, I'm just going to silence my phone. You know, as soon as that happened, I had the mindset of moving forward and thinking, you know, of the great 21 years I had, number one. But number two, I wanted to continue to work. And the Kings job was the only job available. And I was very fortunate to get the job. And Luke Robitaille, the president, and other people who hired me, it was awesome. So, you know, they're a classy organization, and they've had great success. Actually, you know, you look at the Kings and the Blues in the history, they both, until they won cups, had a lot of really great teams and great players. Obviously, Gretzky played for both teams. The Kings won 2 cups, the Blues won. And now they're sort of both in a, not a rebuild, but the rebuild is over, and they're both ascending again. The Kings have averaged over, you know, about 100 points the last 4 years. So I think there's a lot of similarities between the two teams and the two organizations. Of course, they both began together in 1967. As a matter of fact, on this date in 67, these two teams played for the first time ever, and I believe the game was a tie.
Huh, how about that? What's your view of the Blues? Now your opponent tonight, they got off to a bit of a rocky start at home, JK, but they bounced back with that win over Dallas.
Yeah, you know, I think I've seen a lot of teams sort of be a little bit inconsistent early on. You know, the Blues, obviously, and they had two great road wins. The Kings have been very inconsistent. They just have the one win, but they have a couple of overtime losses. I mean, even a team like Tampa Bay, a team that many felt was a cup contender again, and they still are. The Florida Panthers had a great start. Now they've struggled. So, you know, I don't think you can really read too much into what a team does in the first couple of weeks of the season. But the danger is for teams that really struggle in the first month. You put yourself, obviously, behind the eight ball because, as we know, last year in the West, it took 96 points to get in the playoffs. So you don't want to have the struggles and inconsistencies of the first week or two to really drag on too long because you can get yourself in trouble.
John Kelly, the moves that Doug Armstrong has made the last couple of years, and he kept doing them again, you know, this year, you know, a somewhat controversial trade, you know, trading Zachary Bolduc to Montreal. But what do you think about the way he's kind of refitted this team the last couple of years on the fly and made them better without giving up a whole heck of a lot? When you think about Blues history, and you're certainly qualified, is Doug Armstrong going to rank among, be on the short list of the best hockey executives to lead this franchise?
Yeah, he is obviously on the very short list, if not the very best. You know, I would consider, obviously, Scotty Bowman right up there, and, you know, the job that Emil Francis did for years, and a lot of, you know, time when Mr. Francis was with the Blues, they had a lot of challenging issues with the ownership. And then Larry Plough came in and stabilized things for a long time. But, you know, the thing I like about, you know, Doug and what he has done in his tenure with the Blues 13, 14 years now, is he's aggressive. And he was aggressive a couple of summers ago when he got Broberg and Holloway. And to me, that move there and those moves, the double offer sheets, that really jump-started the Blues revitalization, if you want to call it. I think it sped up the process by a year or two. And then, as you mentioned, they make that trade. And you know, I know Bolduc's had a good start with the Canadiens, and I like him, and I think he's going to be 20, 30 goal scorer every year. But defensemen take longer to develop, and Mayhew has not played many games. So, you know, a trade like that, you know, ask me in 5 years what I think of that trade. And who knows? It could be a slam dunk for the Canadiens, or it could be an even deal or whatever. But you can't judge a trade, obviously, when it's just, you know, in its infancy, obviously. So, but I think that overall, Doug has been very aggressive, and I think, obviously, he's one of the top GMs in the NHL.
John, we expect that there will be a tribute for you at the at Enterprise Center tonight. We don't know exactly what that will look like, but we know there's going to be one. What have you heard from Blues fans since the move?
Well, from fans, you know, I was in town until mid-September. My wife and I then, you know, drove out to L.A. and got our place and stuff like that, so you know, the fans have been so nice and on social media and, you know, what can I say? I appreciate that. I mean, I think anyone that does a job, any job, but people who do jobs that are in the public eye, you know, obviously you want to be liked. And, you know, as an announcer, I try to be professional and do the best job I can. But first and foremost, I want people to enjoy my work. So hopefully people did enjoy my work over 21 years, and I always tried to be as cordial and nice and down to earth to every fan I met. So it's been nothing but, respect, and I've certainly appreciated all the fans that have you know, voiced their opinion on social media or I've met in person. It means a lot.
Well, you are loved. There's no doubt about it. You'll be feeling that tonight, I'm sure, from so many people in the crowd, up in the press area in the booth. And our best to you, John. Have a great call tonight, and we'll see you back here on January 24th when the Kings return to Enterprise Center.
Absolutely, guys. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it very much.
Great to have the television voice of the LA Kings, John Kelly, with us on KMOX's Gas House Gang. Kings and Blues tonight, 7 o'clock at Enterprise Center.
Ohtani, oh! Did he? Ohtani! Ohtani has done it again! His third home run!
Shohei Ohtani, game 4 of the NLCS. And that was one of the great performances of all time. 3 home runs, 6 scoreless innings, 10 Ks. Incredible. I mean, maybe Bob Gibson, game 1 of the 1968 World Series, if you want to go greatest World Series performances of all time. Of course, Reggie Jackson, but this guy hits 3 home runs, then pitches like he did. The Dodgers get the win. They sweep the series. Are they unstoppable? Are they paying to win? Let's join Mari Brown with Bernie Miklas and Chris Ranji. I'm Tom Ackerman. Mari, senior contributor to Forbes. It's great to have you on the Gas House Gang. How are you?
Hey, I'm great. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Well, does this change the game? Are we looking at a game changer in baseball? If the Dodgers win this thing, does this provide an incentive for everybody else just to throw down as much money as possible? Is that how they built themselves? What are your thoughts on what the Dodgers have done to get to this point?
Well, I think we got to go back and look at all the teams that made the playoffs to start with before we get to the Dodgers. Because if you look at that, there's pretty wide payroll distribution. I mean, the Brewers, right, are ranked toward the bottom, right, along with the Guardians. The Mariners were ranked in the middle. They were ranked 15th. The Tigers were 16th. And so I think you have to look at it how the brackets lined up. I think that the one spot where you could have had a potential for, if you want to use a better term, Goliath in the Dodgers, or, you know, the Death Star, whatever you, however you want to portray them, would have been that matchup with the Phillies. But otherwise, it was pretty widely distributed. But right now, I think they're going to be very tough to beat. And I think a lot of that has to do with the system that's in place. I don't know if a salary cap is the solution, but there definitely needs to be some adjustments.
Mari, Bernie Miklas, really great to have you on. And, you know, you've done such great work for a long time. So much respect to you. Yeah, about the salary cap. Listen, I admit this. I have mixed feelings about it. I really do. But I also see what a salary cap has done in particular in the NFL. It's been great for all parties, or so it seems. So it's not like it's a blasphemous idea. But I kind of understand where the players are coming from, too. But the question I have for you, is there any chance that the owners will get that salary cap? And if they do, will some players, let's call it the middle class, will they realize that maybe that'll mean it'll be easier for them to get contracts? The money won't, so much of the money will not be directed to the most elite players. Just talk us through that the way you see it.
Yeah, first of all, I don't think it changes much of anything. Baseball's design is completely different than football or basketball, where a skill player can really change game outcome all the time. Baseball's design, certainly, you know, with a batter up, let's say, every inning and a half, pitchers up every fourth day. It's just a completely different model in terms of how the games are designed. Would it create more in the middle class? Maybe. You know, I think that maybe that's it in terms of the upside to it. But I don't see it doing what I think a lot of people think, which is, oh, now the Pirates or the A's or the Rays are suddenly going to be competitive because we have a cap system in place. I think it would maybe possibly alter what happens towards some of the top. Your Phillies, right? The Blue Jays are another one. We're ranked number 5. You know, the Phillies at number 4. Yankees, the usual suspects that you would expect that spend higher would maybe have a greater advantage. But look, guys, I mean, it's not like parity has been a problem in baseball. We have this discussion because it doesn't have a cap system. And therefore, when we see dominance at a certain level, we want to go ahead and put it at that. But baseball has had the best parity out of it all. And I don't think that it solves it. I think to your larger question, will it happen? Absolutely not. I just don't see it happening. I think that what you're going to see is they'll try. I think that they'll honestly try, and we could potentially lose regular season games. But I think what you're going to get to see is, again, further tweaking of the system that we have. Because remember, guys, we have revenue sharing right now. I mean, that money that goes over the top, some of it goes to the players, but the system has shifted to where that those luxury tax penalties, they go back down to those clubs that have not made the playoffs. So we have a form of revenue sharing there. Increased revenue sharing would help. And I think that deferred compensation is maybe the biggest player nobody's talking about here with the situation with the Dodgers. That allowed the Shohei Ohtani contract to go through at such a large volume, and that allowed flexibility for them to do some of their other signings that they've had, which make them a juggernaut. I mean, their pitching is largely what's going to win it for them, I think, over the Blue Jays.
Speaking of that revenue sharing, how bad is the situation where you have teams that get the revenue sharing money but don't really reallocate that toward the payroll?
Yeah, I think this is the bigger problem. I have always thought that this was the bigger problem. You know, call it welfare or whatever however you want to frame it. There are teams that are not trying. So again, the Seattle Mariners are one game away from doing it. And right, they had the lead up until, you know, a really dramatic home run by George Springer, right? So they are the 15th ranked payroll in baseball. In other words, the middle class, the middle, was right there on the edge of being able to go to the World Series. So it's not like teams at the bottom have to spend like the Yankees or the Dodgers and the Mets. They do need to try. And again, I understand that there are certain constraints around certain markets, but there should be an ability for them to have windows, not to laggard around the bottom. You either are smart in your development and you wisely go out and augment with some very, you know, key free agent signings, or you go out and spend. You can't have this thing both ways. You should be able to develop. We've seen this clearly with the Brewers. We've seen it with the Guardians. We've seen it with the Rays for many, many years. It's absolutely doable. So for teams like the Pirates and the A's that just say, woe is me, and throw their hands up in the air, I just think that that's an unacceptable answer.
Mari Brown is a senior contributor to Forbes. Let me ask you about the Cardinals situation. How do you assess what they are going through right now in the road back to success?
Yeah, I mean, this is obviously a down cycle that no fan wants to see. If I was to look back over the last 20 years and I was going to say what is a model for a well-run organization, it is the St. Louis Cardinals. I think people forget that the Houston Astros based their entire structure around what the Cardinals had done. And so, look, I mean, it's bad, guys. I mean, there's no way to portray what's happened recently. There's every reason to believe that they should be able to cycle back up. And in talking to Rob Manfred and others in the league, they see a case in which teams, all teams, should have windows of 5 years up and potentially cycle back down and rotate up and out, right? You just can't be competitive 100% of the time. Then, you know, your parity model goes completely out the window. You want to have teams cycle up and down. I know fans and markets don't want to hear that. They want them to always win. But if you can get to that, then that makes sense. I think that the Cardinals are going to cycle back up. It's clear from some of the comments by ownership, looking at how attendance has dropped so dramatically, that they need to do something. And so, you know, you got to take that as a positive. Given the history of the club and how they've done, I just don't see them hanging around in this position for too much longer, if at all past next season.
Mari, I wanted to ask you about this. You know, I've talked to Bill DeWitt about this a lot. He thinks the thing that they got away from that they have to do now, and you'll agree with it because you watched and covered all those teams. Basically, they used to be masterful at developing their own starting pitching, and that just fell apart. And they're out there every, you know, the last 4 or 5 years, like scrambling like crazy just to find a rotation to put together. In that context, Heim Bloom's draft and development background in Tampa Bay, and even the way he did a superb job with that Red Sox farm system, in your opinion, for what the Cardinals need to do now, is he a good fit?
Yeah, I mean, people are going to look at what happened with the Red Sox and say it was a disaster. I think that it's a completely different model. I think that Chain probably fits better within the context of what the Cardinals are about, the market, where things are at, and looking closely at the development side of things. You know, would he be bad? I don't think so. You know, there are worse options out there. But again, you know, St. Louis is an interesting market in the sense that it's small, but it's maybe the most dedicated fan base. So revenues are a little bit better than some. But yeah, I mean, that is the core thing. I mean, going back to the playoffs here, if you look at what the Mariners had done, they really laid heavily into pitcher development. And that gives you a lot of flexibility, mostly because you guys know pitchers are a premium. So if you can develop them and you get a number of them, they make great trade pieces. If you develop them, then it allows you to, you know, go out and be careful in free agency and do what you can around that, or be able to wrap these guys up if they go through because they're during club control. So yeah, in every instance, you're going to want to go ahead and obviously you want to be measured across both sides of the plate. But obviously pitching, I think, is a core thing that has to happen for every club.
Last thing, which I have for you, Maury, and this is not Major League Baseball related, but the Savannah Bananas are coming back to Busch Stadium in August of next year. And Greg Bettinelli is a venture capitalist. And it was last week, I believe, he was doing some sort of seminar, and he said he believes that franchise could be a $100 billion franchise. And that they will not take any venture capital money, apparently, at least not yet. Do you think they could reach that point? It seems like an outrageous number.
Yeah, I don't know if that number in and of itself, right? I mean, look, like total investment for where they're at, how much more upside do they have? Look, it's a novelty. You know, people that get down on it when they try and compare it to Major League Baseball, I look at them more like the Harlem Globetrotters, only much more successful. So, I mean, I think that it is possible in terms of getting into the multi-billion dollars. I don't know if $100 billion is where it's going to be at. And I don't know how much further this thing can go higher. I think they've largely, maybe other than a world tour, right? They're an event-driven thing. They're going to go ahead and continue to sell out and do large crowds. And I think that they can make an awful lot of money that way. But again, I think that, you know, other than maybe doing franchises in other countries and whatnot, you know, maybe that's how you build it out and get it to that $100 billion number. But as they stand right now domestically in the U.S., I think, you know, they're going to start to run out of runway. You know, it's a heck of a success story. Kudos to them. They focus completely on the customer experience. They spend so much time on that. And I think that in some ways, you know, focusing on the customer is something that Major League Baseball could learn from.
I do. I agree with you. I think it's a lot you can learn from that, no doubt. Maury Brown, senior contributor to Forbes, really good insight today. Appreciate your contribution on the Gas House Gang.
All right, guys. You take care. Thanks so much for having me.
Now back to the Gas House Gang, sponsored by Saliga Heating and Cooling on 104.1 FM KMOX.
Well, the Seattle Mariners, that was a tough one for them, losing to the Blue Jays. Bernie, I want to throw it back to you before we wrap up here. What can you learn if you're the Cardinals? What else can you learn from this entire postseason experience? I mean, the Mariners, as mentioned in that last interview, did get there by piling up pitching depth. I think that's one of the first things Heim Bloom has to do, don't you?
There's no doubt about it. You know, one of the comforting things about watching Seattle's their run to game seven of the championship series and watching them all season, you know, they committed to building a core rotation of really young talent and arms, and they stuck with it. And that's exactly what they have. And it takes them a long way. And I want to point out that one of the first people that the Cardinals hired when Heim Bloom hired Rob Serfolio, he then hired Matt Pierpont as the Cardinals' new director of pitching. And Matt Pierpont was a guy who was central to the development of all of that really outstanding young starting pitching in Seattle. So the Cardinals already have learned, and they are going to try to follow the Seattle model. And that's a wonderful sign. And if you can permit me to something, I wrote about it late yesterday afternoon. When the Cardinals were really, really great, and they were at their best in terms of young starting pitching from 2009 through 2022, right? Over that time, they were third in regular season winning percentage, fifth in postseason wins, got to the playoffs 10 times. Over that time, they had the third best starting pitching ERA in the majors for 14 years. And they were second in quality starts and all these other stats. They had a great starting staff for 14 years. I did the research on this. 61% of the games started over those 14 years were by pitchers that made their major league debut for the Cardinals. They were drafted, developed by the Cardinals, signed by the Cardinals as like an international free agent like Carlos Martinez, or the Cardinals acquired them when they were very, very young from other organizations like Adam Wainwright. But all 30, I think it's 32 of those young pitchers that they developed on their own, every single one of them made their major league debut as Cardinals. 61% of the starts made over 14 years. Now, if that doesn't convince Cardinals fans and everybody else that this is the way to go, instead of having to go out every winter and scramble to put together a mediocre starting rotation, I don't know what to tell people who would say, well, I don't think that's the way to go. Of course it's the way to go. The Cardinals got away from it and they fell apart because of it. Now they got to go back to what they used to do best, and Bloom and his people are committed to that and they're working on it already.
I think my overall feeling about what they do next is people need to be patient and let them tear it down as much as they can before they build it back up. And I don't think that's going to be the plan, but it works. We've seen other organizations do it and do it well. Astros did it. The Cubs did it. A lot of teams go that route. And there's going to be some pain here, and I think we just need to be aware of that.
We will be all over it here on the Gas House Gang from start to who knows how it finishes. Bernie Miklas's appearance is sponsored by Saliga Heating and Cooling, a Daikin dealer. Thanks, big man. I appreciate it. Thank you, Ronj. Thank you, Matt Pajeski, Frank Ladd, our guest, Mari Brown, and John Kelly. Have a great call tonight. I'm Tom Ackerman. We say so long from Studio B.